You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Screen Heroes. I am Ray. I am one of your weekly hosts, and I am joined by my other two weekly hosts, Ryan.
Hello.
And Derek.
Hello.
How are you, boys?
Not too bad. We're here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ready to do this thing.
Doing it. Killing it.
Sure.
Showing up.
Undecided.
We're here to talk and discuss things of an entertainment nature.
That's true. It's what we do.
It is.
Yes. So tonight's episode is all about Spider-Man. I was going to go straight to news. I was like ready.
Specifically the newest movie that just came out.
Yeah. Spider-Man, Far From Home. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's what our night is. So that's what we'll be talking about. There will be spoilers. We always talk spoilers eventually. But of course, first and foremost, entertainment news. So I don't know if you guys heard this or not, but Disney cast their live action Little Mermaid. And white people lost their shit.
Yeah.
Like, Twitter and Reddit were disgustingly racist.
People were mad.
Yeah.
I just kept misreading her name as Halle Berry. And I was like, well, I mean, she's a little old for the role, but I like her.
Yeah, it's actually Halle Bailey from the R&B duo Chloe and Halle, who are sisters.
That's cute. I didn't know that. Yeah, I don't know her.
It's not Halle Berry, who is a wonderful and beautiful 50-year-old woman. Who's not playing a 16-year-old.
She was the only Halle B I knew.
That's
so
fair. A lot of people made that, and that's why Halle Berry had to tweet about it later.
Right.
Yeah. You weren't the only one who thought that.
But what's important is we're now arguing over the possible skin tones for a mythological creature in an animated film.
Yes. So, yes, we are.
You know.
The internet is
2019.
Just, yeah. Yeah.
And Terry Crews wants to play King Triton, which
let's do it.
I mean, I think that's my favorite part, because once they announced Halle Bailey, everybody else was just like, and these can be her six sisters, and this can be Ursula, and this can be Triton, and I loved it. Like,
there's only one Triton for me, and that's Terry Crews. If he's not in it, I mean, I already am not interested really, but if he was in it, I'd have at least a sliver of interest.
Well, the other one that I really like is Idris Elba. Like, I would
watch.
He doesn't
need to be in everything. Give Terry a chance.
Stop.
I don't know that his accent works that well. Idris's. He always
I don't
has
think
a
it matters.
Bit,
also, all Terry Crews has to do is be his Old Spice personality, and that's like perfect for it, right? I mean, come on.
I mean, Terry does have the body for it, since, you know, he's like naked totally, but like from the top, the top torso is bare.
Yeah.
You know, and so Terry could just be him and it would look fine.
And his pecs can dance.
Yes.
We never knew he wanted King
He's
Triton's pecs.
Scolding his daughter and his pecs.
No. You have a shot before you're like, she's going to come talk to him, right? And right before she's entering the room, you cut to him and he's in a mirror and he's doing it in a mirror, and then she walks in and is really embarrassed. I think that's the scene.
She swims in. They don't walk.
Yeah, they don't have legs underwater.
There's an entire song about what's that word.
Okay, confession. I haven't seen Little Mermaid in like 20 years.
Oh my God.
It was not my favorite of the film. So I'm actually more looking forward to a live action one that might grab me a bit.
I am too, to be completely honest. Like, Ariel was kind of a dick. So, you know.
It was never really for me.
Anyway, more Disney news. The Mulan trailer dropped. Did you guys see that?
I did.
What'd you think?
I mean, I thought it looked like a really epic film. It doesn't really remind me of the Mulan story, which is fine, but it looks really
Disney
cool.
Mulan.
Of the Disney Mulan story, excuse me, the animated one. But it looks really cool. And of course, I'm drawing a blank on her name now, but the woman who played Keiko O'Brien appears to be playing Mulan's mother.
Guys, we made it 4 minutes before a Star Trek reference.
Not bad.
I think that's pretty good.
It's very relevant, though.
I didn't even know
that was a Star Trek reference, to be honest with you.
Yeah. It is.
Well, anyway, she appears to be playing Mulan's mother, but IMDb doesn't actually show her character name. She's just on the cast list.
Interesting.
So maybe I'm wrong, and it's just the way the trailer was cut made it look that way, but that's cool. I always like seeing Trek actors in other things. So
it looks good. The choreography, from what I can see, looks interesting, and you know, it's not much, It was only a two-minute teaser. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm more interested in that than I normally am in Disney movies, so.
I agree. It looks really cool. I got to say, I was pretty bummed when I heard that the songs were being cut and Mushu was being cut and Shang was being cut. And then, you know, I did a little research and I found out that all those things were very poorly received by the Chinese culture. And in, you know, the 1990s, people may not have given as much crap about it. But now, you know, the Chinese box office, if you bomb there, your movie bombs really badly, so trying to appeal to them is probably the best move. And now, like, we're gonna see a female-led war epic, and I don't think I've ever seen that, so that's cool.
Yeah
looks good.
Yeah,
looking forward to it. March 2020.
Yes so. Actually, like, the teaser just said spring 2020, so
okay. I thought it was slated for March, but yeah, they might. Cool.
All right, so Marvel announced that they're going to have a panel at
San Diego
Comic-Con. I blanked on that.
90-minute panel.
Yeah, it's going to be a long one. Speculation. Totally, they're going to reveal Phase 4 there.
Which is weird, because you would think they would have done it at D23.
Well, they said they were going to, yeah. And D23 is in September this year to keep away from SDCC. So... this is a last minute addition. I'm wondering if San Diego approached them, because earlier this year they made a big deal about how they weren't going to do it. They weren't going to do a Hall H panel, and now they are.
Or they're worried about something leaking and they want to get ahead of it.
Yeah. That's fair.
You know, but I mean, D23 could focus on all the live action Disney stuff they're doing, the new Pixar film, all the Star Wars stuff.
Oh, they totally will. The new
Disney Plus service that's going to be coming out like a month or two later.
Yeah.
So they don't. I don't think they need Marvel content for D23 to have a full slate, and they could always do more stuff. Like, so I'm going to, you know, say it again, but Star Trek also has a 90-minute Hall H mm-hmm. panel at SDCC this year, and the following week is Star Trek Las Vegas, which is the largest Trek convention in the country. So I imagine there will be stuff left out of the SDCC one for STLV. So, you know, I'm sure they'll do the same thing for Marvel.
Well, the D23 has always focused on every aspect of Disney, whereas right. this will just be Marvel. So I imagine there will be a Marvel panel, but it could be more slated towards their TV shows. And I imagine the big hype at D23 is going to be the future of Star Wars, considering they have a few TV shows announced, but we don't really know what the following trilogy is going to be.
That's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping we get, you know, to find out some more information on some of the TV stuff.
Yeah.
The Marvel thing. Movies are great. You know, we all want to know what Phase 4 is, but I've very much enjoyed Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I know we got this season that's running now, and one more season, I think, is their last one they've announced. So,
right.
You know, I'd like to find out if there's anything coming after that. Or are they doing anything with Hulu?
Well, yeah. Like, I want to know what's going on with The Runaways. They got into that show. Same with Cloak and Dagger, like, and they keep renewing them for more seasons, but they're not really announcing them or plugging them as much. So what's going on?
Yeah, some more information on some of the animated shows they're doing.
Yeah,
the Defenders and some of those.
The What If would be cool yeah. to kind of see, because we know that they're gonna do a
Peggy Carter.
I want to say Haley Atwell, Peggy Carter as Captain America, but we don't know what else is coming down the pipe from that. So
absolutely,
and yeah. maybe we'll get some glimpses at WandaVision and Captain Falcon and Winter Soldier. Or
Disney Plus did release their full schedule when things are going to line up. None of the Marvel shows that are filming are appearing at launch. It's but all of the MCU will be available at launch, so we'll be able to see that. I think Endgame is the only one that won't be at launch, and we'll get that a few months later. But
once the Netflix contract is up.
Exactly.
And I think The Mandalorian is a launch
show. It is.
Show,
yeah.
So
that one and What If are at launch. It's the Loki, the WandaVision, and the Captain.
But is it just one episode?
Or I was just going to ask, do we know if they're releasing it weekly?
We don't.
I want to know. I want to know that it's all there for me to binge.
Well, but that's the new thing, though, is like Netflix is the only one that drops the full seasons now. Everybody
no,
else...
Amazon Prime does, too.
Do they?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because well, we watch Good Omens all in one day.
I guess it depends
day.
On... They did for The Tick.
So I guess it gets complicated depending on what country you're in.
It was, yeah. But they released all the all those parts, you know.
No, you're right.
That was a weird way to do it, but yeah.
It gets complicated internationally because they are they're basically licensing shows internationally that are under a different service here in the US.
Yes.
So that creates some complications, but okay. Either way, most are releasing weekly now. You know, the DCU is doing that. CBS All Access has been doing that. So I imagine it's weekly because they're going to want people to stay subscribed. You know,
I don't know. They have a lot of content. I don't think they're going to be hurting for people to stay subscribed. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I also just don't think they want their $100 million Star Wars show to be gone in 48 hours and everyone's done with it. You know what I mean? Like, the media hype will be over in a weekend.
I imagine they'll do it weekly, to be completely honest, because that's what new networks, new streaming platforms need. They need people to not just sign on and be done with it. They need people to sign on and stay on.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Ghostbusters 2020 got a couple new cast additions.
It did, yeah.
Nobody that anybody really cares about. Right. But it's just a couple.
I'm still
of
super
kids.
Focused on Paul Rudd.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about that, did we? Paul Rudd.
I think we did. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. That was the big casting. But then there was a couple very young kids cast also, and nothing very exciting. But
yeah.
Ghostbusters.
Woo.
Dark Crystal. Derek, I know you wanted to talk about Dark Crystal a little bit.
Sure. So they released a bunch of photos of characters alongside their voice actors. And I mean, it's just a ton of really cool actors. They left Sigourney Weaver off, which may have been by accident, may have been very intentional. We made her character maybe.
So that was a
surprise.
Fan site. That wasn't the official site. Okay. So a fan put that together.
Do you know where they got all the photos of the characters?
I mean, it was the official Dark Crystal page that shared it.
I thought it was too, but
it wasn't.
No,
I mean the
that one, that page only has 3,000 likes and it's mostly fan posts.
I wonder where these characters came from then, because they all look pretty real.
That doesn't mean that they haven't release them somewhere, but the post either way,
they do post random images of the characters on their Twitter and stuff occasionally, so
the post got traction, and you know, we got to see a lot of the Skeksis. Have really cool names. It reminds me of Doctor Who characters. The Gallifreyans all go by nicknames, and they're all like, it's not just the Doctor, but there's also, you know, the Master and the Librarian and things like that. So the Skeksis all have really cool the job names. The Architect,
the
original, Chamberlain.
They
did, yeah. So that connects.
Although they did have also other names. Skek-Ung, Skek-Tek. Skek-Tek right. was the scientist, you know, all these other... I don't even know them all. My brothers know them all because they're crazy about that stuff. But yeah,
get on their level, Ryan.
Yeah, I need to try harder. But yeah, it's a loaded cast, really loaded. I can't remember the last show that I've seen that had such amazing talent in droves.
It makes me almost nervous because I think like some of these roles are going to be one episode.
They might be.
You know,
I'd like to know the budget. Since it's mostly practical effects, and that in itself can be expensive, and the voice cast is certainly not cheap, even though it's cheaper than having them there in person, I would be curious to know the budget.
It's crazy. What year did that swing? Because practical effects used to be the cheaper way to go about it, and computer effects...
It's still pretty cheap. I mean, CGI is still very expensive. I mean, they both have their pluses and minuses. Okay.
I mean,
Derek knows all the budgets for practical effects versus CGI effects.
It's not what I said. It's not what I said.
Well,
but
you're doubting.
I do think in general it is cheaper because of labor costs to do CGI, because the number of CGI animators you would need for a single creature or object versus the number of, you know, prop makers and puppeteers and things like that, I think
same technology that they used in 1982 and they had 13 people doing one Skeksis. So
no, it's not the same technology. That's true.
I think that that's probably the cost for both of those technologies progressed on both of them. And I think that they're probably, like I said, they each have their own benefits. I'm not going to pretend that I know that one is more expensive than the other or vice versa. But yes, at some point it does seem like, you know, CGI was so expensive and
right?
practical effects, you've got to go with those if you're a low budget movie. And now it's, you know, there's a mix. A mix seems to be the way to go for most movies.
Now, lower budget movies will use special effects, CGI effects all the time. And I have zero idea where they got that money.
I think part of the issue is that there's a much wider range in CGI effects, right? Like, you can have incredibly cheap, unfinished CGI like effects.
Black Panther.
Yeah.
Incredibly great CGI effects, like Black Panther.
Yeah. I was going to use the unfinished Hulk scene that they added to Endgame as an example. But, what you see, on a TV commercial, all the way up through what you would see in the highest budget films, like Spider-Man and things like that. You know, there's a wide range, whereas practical effects, it either looks good or it doesn't look good. There's not a whole lot of gray area.
Yeah.
You know, you either get episode 1 Yoda or you get episode 7 or 8 Yoda.
Yeah.
So,
or episode 5 Yoda.
Yeah, I was trying to go with.
I know you were, but.
You know.
But needless to say, Jim Henson and Henson, well, not Jim Henson anymore, but the right. Henson Company is always at the cutting edge of, you know, practical effects and puppetry work. And so I'm sure that they were on the bleeding edge of the ways to do this in a convincing way and also a cost-effective way. So, I mean, it doesn't look like they spared any expense on anything. I mean, everything looks so gorgeous and perfect. So,
I would just be curious. You know?
I'd be curious, too. Is it Mandalorian budget? Is it half that?
There's no way. I mean, I can't imagine it cost that much.
No, I can't either, but.
Because the sets aren't going to be
Netflix doesn't have Disney money.
That's true.
They probably have. If anybody else has close enough, it's probably Netflix, but they still don't have the same amount of equity to throw into their projects just yet.
I just don't think you could spend that kind of money on this, because just the sheer size of the sets wouldn't be the same. Like, when you think about the Mandalorian's got to walk through entire cities at times and have ships that they're going to have to be on and things of that nature, like, that's where the expense really comes in.
So Stranger Things dropped this last week. It dropped on 4th of July, and did you watch it?
Exploded with memes since then.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yes, my girlfriend and I binged it Saturday night and Sunday throughout most of the day. It was only 8 episodes, so it wasn't that bad. But yeah, we knocked it out.
What'd you guys think?
I was
no
just
spoilers.
Everybody's spoiling everything for me. So
right.
Between that and Spider-Man, because I waited till Sunday to see Spider-Man, I was walking on eggshells all around the internet. But yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was better than season 2, but maybe not
me
as good
too.
As season 1. It's tough to say anything without getting into spoilers. So.
No, I don't want to spoil anything. One cool thing for those who have seen it, Baskin-Robbins is releasing a USS Butterscotch ice cream flavor, which is
Derek
cute.
Is very interested in.
I think it's. I
Aren't
think
they
it's
releasing new
tie-in.
Coke also?
Well,
or
the, yes,
the
that's,
cans.
That's
They're
out.
The cans.
No, so I don't. I only know of one way to get it. Coca-Cola is selling a special pack. It's $20. It comes with 4 things. 2 glass bottles that are Stranger Things themed of normal Coke, and then 2 cans of new Coke.
And you've already got this.
No,
right?
It's $20 for 4 cans.
That.
Well, I mean, I haven't really decided yet. I just
How dare you
done
speak
it
out
yet.
Of turn, Rachel.
Sorry, just trying to have a wedding over here.
Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah.
Spend $20 on 4 things of soda that we can't drink. We have to look at.
Collectibles.
Well, no, I would drink one of the new Cokes and save the other one.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Amateur.
Anyway, so I will say one criticism I have of Stranger Things this season is the product placement was so blatant that it distracted me. It was not good. Like,
I 100% disagree.
Oh, yeah?
Because in the 80s, product placement was 100% shoved in your face. Mac and Me was a movie all about McDonald's, I think it was.
Yeah, that's why it was called Mac and Me. Like,
it was. It's not good. That was. I thought it was right on brand.
I mean, even before that, Close Encounters, the lights were supposed to be product logos because Spielberg was trying to make a point about how if aliens were to communicate with us, that's the language they would think we used.
Yeah,
but he couldn't afford the licensing, so they couldn't do it. So, I mean. That didn't bother
me. I'm not saying that it wasn't
a lot of people
in like that it didn't make sense. I'm just saying that like it was every episode, every scene.
This is not a spoiler. The discussion about new Coke versus old Coke, that was too much for you.
No.
That was an actual thing
that
happened a lot.
That was fine. I'm just saying that, you know, close-ups on the Burger King and 7-Eleven and Tostitos, and like, but, I mean, it was so much.
Modern stuff does that now. It's just you don't think about it because it's brands we see every day. I think this is just a little more obvious because it's like, oh man, I remember that Pizza Hut box. Like, you know,
that was the mall. The mall was just a bunch of like, I remember when those shows were or those stores were open. Like, that was fun for me. The fun hide and go seek of that, but everything else. I just felt it was like, how much money did they give you for this?
So. I don't know. Weird Al did announce he has released that shirt that Dustin's wearing.
No.
Yeah. You can buy it now. I got the email.
Oh, Derek's on the Weird Al email list. He is, apparently. Man.
Yeah. I've been on email on the Weird Al email list for a very long time.
Weird Al was in his life before I was. It's fine. It's fine, guys.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, the first concert,
I ever went to was a Weird Al concert.
I will say that if you're complaining about the amount of smoking in Stranger Things,
it's like you didn't live in the
80s. Right. Like, yeah. Up until the mid 2000s, guys, like 2006, you could smoke literally almost anywhere. Yeah. So,
see, I don't want to spoil anything, but yeah, there's a particular moment that I actually laughed about it, about how blatant it was.
Oh, yeah.
We could talk about that offline. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but I don't know. It's a tough line to walk, though, because you look at even like older stuff like Ghostbusters, for example, right?
All of them are smoking.
Yeah, there's the whole, like, all the time.
The whole make it look really cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But like, that's not.
Sigourney Weaver's the only one that's not smoking, and that might have been a character thing and not an actor thing.
Janine doesn't smoke.
I thought Janine did.
I don't think she does. Okay, I mean, I never fair. Really like analyzed it that much, yeah. But I don't think she did.
I don't know. But like in or today's, Louis
Tully. He did smoke.
Oh yeah, right. That's right.
But like, you know, you can't do that anymore. In you know, stuff aimed towards children, and so Stranger Things has this weird job to do where it wants to be accurate to the time, but. You know, what is okay and what's not okay. And I don't know. I mean, I don't see Stranger Things as being a kids show. It's about kids.
No, it's actually three different movies going on at the same time. Yeah. You have the kids like adventure tale. Then you have the teenage horror movie. Mm-hmm. Then you have the adults with like a crime drama.
Spy thriller kind of thing.
And then
yeah.
When they all come together, then, you know, that's when things actually get done. But
that's Stranger Things. The first season was like that, where they have, you know, two or three different plots going. And yeah.
Well, it's just like I've seen some headlines about some other show on Netflix about it being the Stranger Things for adults. And I'm just wondering who out there is watching Stranger Things and thinking, this show's too juvenile for me. I don't know.
You know, the only juvenile part was the Never Ending Story sing along.
Oh, and my how God. Dare it
was,
you?
Okay, no, like that was the no, we're not. That was the only like cutesy kid part. I didn't think it was juvenile or immature, and I thought it was fine. It was a nice break from the serious stuff.
I did not like that.
Oh, I mean, knew I liked you would the hate song it.
Use, but like,
did it go
was on
too
very
long?
Last episode. And everything is culminating.
Yeah, that's true.
It was really, like a 4-minute Never-Ending Story song break. It's like, what in the world is happening?
Ray made fun of me because I picked up on what song it was on like note 3.
No, he gets the third word out of his mouth, and Derek's like, "Is that the Never-Ending Story?" No. And I'm like, "Yeah, that's."
I don't know
what
why you
got to
tamper me down. Let's move on.
I'm not. All right,
let's not spoil.
Whatever.
Spoilers.
Okay, so last thing, and then we'll move on to Spider-Man: Far From Home. Reports are saying that X-Men Dark Phoenix bombed bigger, worse, harder than Fantastic Four 2015's version. So that says a lot. That says a lot.
Imagine how much worse it would have done if Ian hadn't been alive.
Ouch. Some important things to note for what this means. It doesn't necessarily mean that Dark Phoenix physically sold fewer tickets.
Right.
It has to do with the ratio between the budget and how much the movie made, because the idea is that a film is not truly profitable until it doubles its budget. And
correct.
So there's a ratio that's done. And if you work off of the budgets, and X-Men Dark Phoenix had a higher budget than Fantastic Four did, Fantastic Four made more percentage-wise.
X-Men had a higher budget than, like, almost every the budget for that movie was very, very
yeah,
high.
It was Star Wars almost 200 yeah. something.
Basically,
something
it
like
lost
that.
More money than Fantastic Four lost. That's what it comes down to, just in perspective. So that sucks, and it is a good thing that Disney now has it in its possession.
Did it really lose that money? Because, I mean, Disney bought them out, so the money was lost to Fox.
Fox didn't lose any money.
Fox, you know, was the one that spent all that money, or most of it anyway. Disney, all they really did was release it.
I mean, so finances, when it comes to, like, corporations who purchase corporations, gets kind of complicated, right? Because it was 20th Century Fox was the production company. But Fox Corp, on top of that, of course, owned 20th Century Fox. So I guess it kind of depends when the bills were paid, yeah, right?
And I mean, Disney still had to pay for promotion and all that stuff.
Yeah, marketing, things like that. And that's why they have to double it, right? Because the movie had a budget, but there is the marketing and promotional budget,
which
too.
Which they did not spend anything on.
Which, because... I mean, an argument could be made that maybe it didn't lose as much as people think because they didn't spend as much on that.
Yeah, there was no promotion for that movie.
You know, like John Carter of Mars really didn't have a marketing budget, so.
Which was super dumb, like. That movie is underrated. It was really good compared to the source material. I thought it was a great adaptation. Anyway, moving on. So we're going to go on break like we do. It'll be 30 seconds or less, and then we'll come back. Yeah, I'm timing you. Make my commercial breaks tolerable. You got this.
Hey, friends. This is Cam, one of the hosts of the Gamer Heroes podcast. We really hope you're enjoying the show you're listening to right now, and if you are, please consider becoming a patron of the Heroes Podcast Network at patreon.com/heroespodcasts. Your support would genuinely mean the world to us, and would allow us to cover hosting costs for the website, get new equipment and software, and even make it out to different conventions and events to meet you, our loyal listeners. All Patreon tiers will get you access to the Patron Lounge and Slack, which will allow you to chat and interact with your favorite HPN hosts. On behalf of everyone here at HPN, thank you all so much for your continued support. We really couldn't do any of this without you.
All right, guys, we are back. We're here to talk about Spider-Man Far From Home, which came out on Tuesday, I guess, technically, to get ahead of the 4th of July long weekend kind of thing. So it feels like a long time since I've seen this movie. It's really been less than a week still, but I usually see these on Friday or Saturday, so... It's a long time. What'd you guys think?
Spoiler free.
Yeah, right now. We'll do spoiler warning in just a couple minutes. But right now, what do you think?
I liked it better than Homecoming.
Same here.
Yeah, it's definitely better than Homecoming. Probably my second favorite live action Spider-Man movie.
I think it's my first.
Live action, I guess I can get pretty
close. Yeah, live action. I still think Into the Spider-Verse is just absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure it's fair to rank it with the live action ones, because there's some things I'm not sure we're ready to do in live action, right. But and the visuals of Into the Spider-Verse are just insane.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably my second favorite of the Spider-Man live action films to Spider-Man 2 way back when.
One thing that the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies do very well is the villains, and I'm not going to spoil anything about this movie right now, but the villain is handled very well in this movie, just like Michael Keaton was. Michael Keaton was the highlight of the first movie. I think all of us pretty much agreed on that. So
yeah,
if they keep that tradition going, if there's a third one, then, you know, I'm hoping that they do the same thing.
Yeah, so that's where things get interesting, because Tom Holland, one, has said that he wants to play Spider-Man until he can no longer walk. So, as far as he's concerned,
I'm not sure I want old man Spider-Man.
I'm not sure I want that either, but...
You are Spider-Man. Yeah. Hugh Jackman will show up.
As far as I'm concerned.
Nope.
He's not quitting the role. That's basically what he's saying. And Feige has said that they have at least 5 to 7 storylines planned. However, interesting tidbit that came out today. So the Sony and Marvel contract is done after this movie, but the rights go back to Sony if this movie does not make $1 billion. Is it at the box office or just total?
At the box office.
Okay.
International. To date, it's at 588 and change after about less than a week. You know, a full counting so Monday's numbers. So a full
likely going to hit $1 billion. It'd be close.
It would be pretty surprising if it didn't. Now, to be fair, there's some other big hitters that are out. Right, you've got Toy Story 4, The Lion King's coming out soon. There's some other big movies, but it made almost 60% of that in its first week.
Yeah.
It would be pretty shocking if it didn't hit $1 billion based on that. Now, that number is kind of surprisingly high because its opening weekend numbers were only 93.6 million, which doesn't sound like much.
But I mean, Toy Story weekend, outdid it had been that. Out for 5 days before opening weekend, or 4 days before opening
weekend. That's where it gets complicated, right? So the opening weekend is the 5th through the 7th, but it opened on the 2nd. So it's really hard to kind of say. So the 2nd through the 7th, if you include it's Tuesday release day through Sunday, it made $185 million, which is a much better. Bigger opening, yeah. Right? So, like, when you release on these weird days, it kind of screws up everything. It was the largest Tuesday opening ever.
There's only three holidays where people do that. It's 4th of July, it's Thanksgiving, and it's Christmas, and it's because there are a large portion of the population that aren't celebrating those, so they go see movies. That's what they do. Or
have extra days off of work.
Exactly.
Things like that. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's why they release on those weird days. And it's unfortunate that we can't include everything in the reports, but whatever. Whatever.
Well, yeah, it skews all the numbers, right? Because if you were to compare it to other Spider-Man films, it's 4th place opening weekend because it only reports the 92.5 that it made. Because Spider-Man 3 made 151. Well,
this outdid Spider-Man 3 if you include the first 3 days it was out.
Right. And that's just where it gets tough because that movie came out in May. It didn't have a holiday to jumpstart off of. So it's really hard to compare them.
Didn't it come out on Memorial Day?
Mm-mm. Oh. Beginning of May.
Oh.
So.
You mean Cinco de Mayo doesn't count? It's a movie holiday? It's
not normally a movie holiday. No.
No, it's not.
That people get off work for to go see movies. Probably
it's
not.
The Mexican restaurants hate white people day.
Now, an argument could be made that it had some stiff competition with Stranger Things coming out, right? A lot of people binge Stranger Things over the weekend. Over 40 million people started watching Stranger Things already, which was a record for Netflix, with almost 20 million already finishing it. So those people may have been too busy to see Spider-Man.
I really hope that Netflix doesn't take that as a hint and they're like, well, we just need to wait 2 years between every season. Like, fuck you, don't do that.
Well, I imagine we'll have to wait at least a year and a half because the next one's going to be at Christmas.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. We can talk about that spoiler-filled stuff later at another time.
Fair enough. Okay. So let's move on. We're going to talk spoilers. We're going to talk about our favorites and not-so-favorite parts of the movie. So here's your warning. Pause the podcast. Come back to us in a day or so after you see it. And let us know what you think in the comments below. So, guys, let's start. What do you guys really think?
Well, so there's some key pieces of information that, you know, we just should make sure everyone's aware of. So we have the blip, which is not the snap. Worst
name.
Oh, God, it's so bad.
No, because the Peter Tingle is worse.
No, I love that. That's hilarious.
it's stupid. So the blip has to do with the people who came back after the unsnapping.
And they actually showed footage of that happening. Like, Endgame didn't show anything. It was a great,
clever way to, you know, kind of remind you that people just kind of came back in the exact same place they were before.
Mm-hmm. And other things were going on. Yeah. Now, there's the movie convenience that you just have to accept that anybody of importance from Spider-Man Homecoming got dusted.
Yeah.
Everybody of importance got dusted.
So they're all the same age.
And there is one character they introduced who was a junior high student when they first started, and now he's a high school student and he's big and buff and he's completely gone through puberty, and they joke about how it was crazy that just yesterday blah 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 looked like this. And I thought that was a good touch, but you know, maybe include more than one character. Yeah. Seems
or,
little...
or like maybe a character we knew from the first movie. Yeah. Like, it seemed like a really cheap way to be like, see, some kids grew up without having to impact any of your characters that mattered.
Yeah.
You know, from the first movie.
It would have been interesting, like, very unfair to the guy who plays Flash Thompson, but it would have been interesting to see him come back as like a student teacher or something, because he had already graduated high school and he was 22 and he was like substituting or something like that.
And he was pretty insignificant in this movie anyway.
He was.
You know, because the new kid was like the real antagonist in the friend group instead of it being Flash. But so, yeah, so the blip, that's important. Obviously the events of Endgame are really big, so spoilers for Endgame if you haven't seen that but you decided to go see this.
Oh my god, they take care of that in like the first 30 seconds, guys.
So yeah, I guess
Okay, so let's talk about the absence of Tony Stark and just how apparent it is, how in your face. How did you guys feel about that?
I mean, they didn't have a choice. Like, they wrote this Spider-Man that way. Mm-hmm. So when they decided to kill off Tony, they had no other option. They had to give him all this crazy tech that somebody had to make, and it had to be Tony, but he's not around anymore. So he must have left it to him. Like, they didn't really have a choice. Okay. This movie had to deal with, and I think it did a good job. I'm not slamming the movie, but they were forced to live with a lot of consequences that weren't their decision, if that makes sense. And they just had to write around it, right? They had to write around the blip. They had to write around the death of Tony and just find out how to deal with that.
Yeah. There were some fan theories going around that said that the glasses were going to be this big technological thing. And it was. But they also said that, you know, Tony was going to have uploaded his consciousness and that he was going to be, which would have completely ruined the whole thing. And I'm really glad that they didn't do that. But Tony is basically Uncle Ben, for all intents and purposes, in the MCU.
Yeah.
So whatever. I mean, it was fine. It didn't really bother me that much. They might have, if anything, played it a little too hard, but overall I was fine with the amount of references to Tony. It was an important part for the character, and, you know, so the consequences should have some impact.
Now, going with that route, I know this kind of skips ahead a bit, but it's relevant to this, and it's during, like, the coolest scene in the movie. There is the moment where you see, like, zombie Iron Man. You guys know what scene I'm talking about, with, like, the broken helmet and everything. That was far darker and creepier than I ever thought that movie was going to go.
Well, that scene was a direct, like, homage to Marvel Zombies. It had, it was, like, a cover from the Marvel Zombies comic.
Yeah, they're never going to be able to adapt that live action.
Maybe in What If. That would be cool.
That would be cool.
Well, again, that's still animation.
Yeah.
So... But like, that would be awesome.
But in not just an MCU movie, but a Spider-Man movie, that just felt super dark. So that surprised me to see that. Felt weird, yeah. You know, zombie Tony.
Well, I really liked the AI that they did use, and Edith was great, and I liked the acronym "Even in Death, I'm the Hero." Like, that's
it was good.
That's fantastic. How'd you guys like Nick Fury and Spider-Man's interaction?
It was fine.
This is the first time the two of them have been on screen together and talked. Yeah, they hadn't
met, really.
There were parts that were funny. I mean, it works better after the post-credit scene for me, but during the movie, I just felt like he lost all of his, like, his mojo. Spark. Yeah, yeah, his mojo, exactly.
And do you guys think Sam Jackson's phoning it in? Like,
No, I think it was how it was written. And that's why I think it makes sense after the post-credit scene, because it turns out that it's not actually him. Right. And that works because...
Well, we already went into spoilers, so we can talk about the fact that it's Talos.
Yeah, exactly. He's a Skrull, and actual Fury is out vacationing in space somewhere, which we'll talk about that later, but that makes the rest of it work for me, because he just seemed totally not himself. I think mojo is the right way of saying it.
Yeah. I mean, I had the post-credit scenes both spoiled for me before the movie, so I watched the movie knowing that he was a Skrull. And because of that, I was able to pick up on things during the movie. And so it wasn't the worst. It probably would have been a little bit better as a surprise. But, I mean, there was the scene where he says Quentin Beck is from... an Earth, just not your Earth, is what he says to Peter. Yeah. In the trailer, he said our Earth.
Right.
But in the movie, he says your Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I thought that was a weird line at the time.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, it makes sense.
Right. So, you know, you were able to see a lot of little things that kind of gave it away.
Mm-hmm.
That he was phoning it. It wasn't Samuel Jackson phoning it in, but it was... Talos or however you say it, all, you know, acting like he thought a cool spy would, and, you know.
He did the best he could, but, like, nobody, I think it shows that nobody else can be Nick Fury.
It's really funny when they have to do that. It's like the scene in the seventh Harry Potter movie, Deathly Hallows Part 1, where Helena Bonham Carter has to pretend to be, like, first of all, she's Bellatrix... Or she's Hermione pretending to be Bellatrix, but, like, there's so many different layers, so maybe that was it.
Yeah.
I do. I think it was very much on purpose, and okay. It worked after the fact for me, but it That's was weird fair. In the moment.
Are you guys tired of seeing Nick Fury pop up in these things?
No, not even at all.
Yeah, me either.
If anything, I was bummed that he missed out on some of these really big stories, like Infinity War,
and
like
Civil War.
You know, he just wasn't there. I mean, I know he's in the post-credit scene for Infinity War, but he's not in those movies. Nope. And considering who he is and where the MCU began, kind of rubbed me the wrong way, and so I'm glad to see him back in action, and I hope we get the real version of him.
He's also stuff. Only like one of three or two, you know, connections to the Marvel TV shows, so
yeah,
you know, I don't know, keeping him around is fine with me. He doesn't do big parts of the movies for the most part, and so, you know, it's always nice to see that familiar face that's been there since the very first.
Well, especially now that so many of them are gone.
Yeah,
you know, we don't really know what Hulk's up to.
Speaking of that, this bring in talking about the movie, they do at the very beginning, like the school news segment.
Oh man,
yeah.
And they talk about Captain America as if he was dead. So, do you guys think that after he came back, he just never revealed him what was going on, and so now everybody just assumes
that's
that he died?
That's such a weird what if. Like, that means that he would have had to stand by during the, you know, 1960s and 70s, the civil rights movement.
Well, that's not true.
You don't have to get past all of that. See, that's the issue.
Because he was frozen.
No. It's not because he was frozen. The way time travel functions in Endgame is that without an Infinity Stone, you can't change the timeline. That's the whole point, right? Is that only the Infinity Stones can affect each other. So that when he goes back and leaves himself in the past with Peggy, he can't change anything else. So the events that happened. Whether he was there and tried to make them not happen or not is irrelevant, because they were going to happen.
So regardless of getting into another time travel discussion about Endgame, do you think that, like, I mean, he is back. He's
I'm sure the Avengers know.
Right, but the world is just assumed that he died.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that's on purpose. I'm sure Nick Fury knows, right? Because Bucky and
I just thought it was interesting because I hadn't given much thought to that. I guess I just assumed that the world would honor him as a hero. And
I'm sure they did. I'm sure there was a big funeral for the Lost Avengers and things like that. That opening was super weird, though.
Oh, yeah. All of a sudden, when I hear Whitney Houston's "I Will Always Love You," I'm like, what
and you know what's funny? I watched Kevin Smith's review of this movie.
Yeah.
He revealed that song is one of the most expensive songs to get. Because not only do you have to get Whitney Houston's approval, you also have to get Dolly Parton's approval.
That's very
true.
And
so that song, for just to use for like 20 seconds, is literally just Marvel flexing their own, you know, dollars.
I mean,
they could have used almost any
honestly
other song.
Let's I think fair, they though. Should have used the Sarah McLachlan song that appears in the animal cart commercials, because that gets the heartstrings a lot more. True.
The budget for this movie is not high. It's $160 million. So for perspective, that's less than Aquaman and Suicide Squad.
Probably
man,
like
the
4
CGI
million
was
of that
on
went
point.
Straight, went straight to Whitney Houston and Dolly Parton.
So I mean, maybe they spent a lot on that one song, but they didn't they weren't throwing money like. Dark Phoenix costs significantly more than this movie.
Yeah, I'm just my point was that song is very expensive.
That's a
in
good
terms
point.
Of so, overall songs you could pick for
it
a
is.
Movie. So it's very funny that they picked that song.
I mean, they maybe Michael Giacchino is just not particularly expensive, and he's just on tap for Marvel stuff now because he did the score.
Giacchino.
Is it Giacchino? I used to call him Giacchino, and I was told that was wrong. So
that's how you say an Italian lesson.
Okay. Well,
I'm Italian.
No, I don't know. We'll have to call him up.
I did like that scene, though. That whole, intro to the school, you know.
What a great moment of exposition.
Yeah. And a great way to handle it, just in general. We can all relate to that. We all saw that crap when we were in high school, and, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. It went on a little long, but
It was a little long. Then we lost the scene from the trailers, which I was very disappointed
about.
With the cops. Yeah. I love that scene. I always love when you get to see, the heroes that we have in our real world, police officers, firefighters, paramedics, things like that, interact with superheroes. Mm-hmm. And the superheroes say something nice to them, or they have a really nice repertoire or whatever. And we lost that scene completely. And that was disappointing, because that was the first scene that really got me a little bit excited for this movie. And then it just wasn't there at all.
Well, because it was supposed to show that he's the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, which is a theme in the rest of the movie. But we haven't seen him be that.
And also shows some really great stuff with his suit that you just haven't really gotten to see how his suit handles gunshots and, you know, how his skills have progressed and things like that. So it did a lot of things in that one scene, and they decided to cut it, which was disappointing for me.
I agree.
What about the scene when he's doing the thing with Aunt May on stage?
The charity?
Yeah. That suit looked really weird to me. Did that look weird to you guys, too? In the trailers, it was not that suit.
No, it was not. It's the Iron Spider suit.
It looked very CGI. It did not look like he was wearing an actual suit. It was not good.
I guess I didn't really notice.
In the trailers, he was wearing, like, the
It looked stiff and robotic. It looked like an Iron Man suit, but not. Which, in Avengers, it was clearly Tony's tech, but it flowed more with his movements, where here he was very stiff.
It just looked like he wasn't actually wearing the suit. And it looked like that he was wearing a green screen, and they green screened it on, which something went on there, because he wasn't wearing that suit in the trailer. So obviously they, you know, can easily switch between suits.
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. I didn't notice. I'd have to see it again.
It stood out in a negative way to me in that scene. I much preferred the way it looked in the trailers with the what looked to be a practical suit. Maybe it wasn't, but...
So how do you guys feel about the Happy May romance?
I love it.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I do too.
I love Happy. You know, Jon Favreau, I'm just a fan of Jon Favreau, absolutely, whether it's directing or acting. And so, yeah, he kills it as Happy. And I want to see him end up with Aunt May. Like, I am shipping them, and I want them to be happy together forever.
It's a really good excuse to keep him involved when his character doesn't necessarily need to stay involved anymore, because at the end of the day, he was Tony's like assistant bodyguard guy. Right. So what is he still doing? Well, now, like, this is a good reason to keep him along, and I want to see him.
And he was, but he was also one of the closest people to Tony.
Yeah.
He flat out says that he was his best friend.
Yeah. So, I mean, that, you know, Peter would obviously want to have that piece of Tony, because I mean, that's what Happy is at this point.
Right.
He's more because of the relationship now, but yeah.
He's a good character to have, and like you said, like, I'm just a fan of Favreau in general. And I mean, come on, he did the original Iron Man, and so like this is all kind of thanks to him in a lot of ways too. Like Robert Downey Jr. gets most of the credit, but there's some other people who made that happen too. So
a fun little fact: Jon Favreau produced like a 2-hour behind the scenes documentary of the first Iron Man. He shot it all on his phone, and he shared it on the DVD Blu-ray, and he said that he was playing the long game with Marvel, because in the comics Happy ends up marrying Pepper, and he was like, I'm gonna kiss Gwyneth Paltrow. So I think he's making up for it by making out with Marisa Tomei.
I think he's getting the better end of that deal personally, but
I mean, I'm not gonna say anything, but Marisa Tomei is gorgeous.
I do love the relationship.
It's cute.
And the way it works with Peter is great. Mm-hmm. Like the awkwardness and all that. Yeah, it's very good.
And she's a great addition too. Like, I know that they really aged her down, and we talked about that during Homecoming, so I don't want to harp on that. But yeah, Tomei's great. Like, she's just awesome, and I really like having her. Like, her dynamic with Peter is really good too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because she's younger, it's a little more of like a playful of relationship.
And right, she's just a little hipper. And
yeah. It's cool.
I agree.
Okay, so let's talk about the kids. They go off to Europe for a summer vacation that is completely 100% set up and sabotaged by Nick Fury. I'm not even going to say S.H.I.E.L.D. because it's not really S.H.I.E.L.D. It's just Nick Fury. And
it's not even him.
The cool thing is they shot on location for everything. They were actually in Venice. They were actually in Prague. They were actually in London. They were actually in Paris. Like, they got to go to all these places, and that had to be such a like interesting.
Well, Tom Holland lives like an hour away from all those places, supposedly.
an hour.
He lives in London.
He lives very close to a lot of the places they were shooting.
I mean, compared to us.
Well, and compared to like where he shot in Homecoming. Right. I saw an interview where he said that Homecoming is called Homecoming, but he filmed that very far away, and then Far From Home, he filmed very close to his home. So. It was kind of a weird reversal. This is what
happens when you pick a British Spider-Man.
Yeah, exactly.
All of our superheroes are British.
Almost. No, it was cool. The different places they go are kind of neat, and it's a fun excuse for why they're doing it.
Well, you could tell that they weren't sets. You know, Venice was actually Venice.
I really loved actually seeing Spider-Man away from New York. It was something too. Because like every Spider-Man we've seen has been in New York, and that's kind of part of his character. But then getting to see him in this new environment was... It was a little bit refreshing, honestly.
The thing is, my problem with it is it actually doesn't make a lot of sense to me in the way the story was handling it, because Nick Fury makes this all happen, right? And he makes this all happen because of these events that are taking place. But Mysterio made all these events take place because he wanted to get to Peter to get the glasses. why go through all the trouble to get him halfway across the world when you could have done all of this in the States?
Maybe that's because he didn't very want to deal easy. With all the Avengers.
There's none like a ton of other heroes.
Wait, if Nick Fury can take Peter Parker across the country and his entire class, why can't he ask another adult hero who does this full time? Like, that doesn't work for me. If they're not available to go to Italy, they're not available anywhere
else.
Well,
there's also heroes in the MCU that are canon that don't work with Nick Fury at all. And that's every single one of Defenders. Yeah. So.
Well, but it doesn't have to be New York necessarily, right? But it also, like, we've had a lot of stuff happen in New York that the Defenders haven't shown up for, like all of Avengers. So, and the first Spider-Man movie. So I don't think having it in New York means those characters have to show up because they haven't before. So that's all. It's a little convoluted that the guy who wants to get really close to Peter, who's clearly American, goes to another country in the hopes that somehow Peter will get to that other country because Nick Fury is going to do it, even though he doesn't really know Nick Fury very well. Like, it's a very convoluted excuse to try and get to a guy who's very accessible.
Well, it also breaks away from the MCU issue that everything takes place in this one city and, you know, everybody's around, why don't they call other people here? They kind of explain that as much as they can. You know, they write off Thor, Captain Marvel, and Doctor Strange all within a couple lines of exposition. So,
right, but you know, that would be the same in New York, is all I'm saying. Like, that logic is why it's just Peter, but that logic would have worked in any country in the world. That's all.
Okay.
So you just have a bunch of American people who made a really weird plan to do this in another country. That's all.
Okay. Maybe taking down monuments and historical landmarks was a bigger deal for them. They wanted to make a really big impact on the world, and New York has been destroyed 17 different times. So it wouldn't be much of an impact.
We also only see the final two. Or three.
I thought Italy was the first one.
No, because Mexico is the first one.
Yeah, it's in Mexico.
It was Mexico, Italy, and then Prague.
Huh. Okay. I mean, that makes even less sense, I think. But all right. Let's move on from that.
Please.
MJ and Spidey romance. Go.
It's cute. I'm great with it. Yeah. It's not traditional MJ, and I'm on board with it. So.
Well, like Sony owns the names Mary Jane, but not MJ, so she can be MJ.
I do think Spider-Man is about due for his Gwen Stacy moment, though. so I like this far along is about the time they would do that. And, if they do the third movie, then I feel like there's going to be something like that.
God, that would suck. His girlfriend in the first movie has to move away because he gets her father arrested. And then Tony Stark dies. So, I mean, yeah, I guess we are due for some Spidey tragedy because the universe does hate Spider-Man.
I think the way they set it up, though, I'm not sure he's going to have time for that type of thing. But and then like if they can't use the name Mary Jane, they can't use Gwen Stacy.
Well, I'm just saying Gwen Stacy moment. It doesn't have to be Gwen Stacy, but a moment like that where she dies tragically because of what he does, essentially.
Like he has a hand in it, trying to save her kind of thing. Like, ugh.
I think since Amazing Spider-Man did that, they might purposefully just avoid it.
Well,
because movies always do that.
No, not movies.
Like X-Men Dark Phoenix was the Phoenix story like 17 different times.
I don't think using the X-Men movies as an example is a good thing to look at because those movies are mostly
I'm just
garbage.
Saying that doesn't stop people from making just because it's been done.
Well, Spider-Man has used that plot twice in live action. Like the first movie had the exact same setup where Green Goblin captures his love interest and makes Spider-Man choose between the love interest or like a truck, train, car full of people. And in this one, it just happened to work out. And in Amazing Spider-Man 2, it was Green Goblin's son and it didn't work out. So we've already seen that plot line twice. But
well, I meant it not working out.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to do that.
Okay.
Yeah, you're going to put people in peril. I mean, that's what you do in superhero movies, but I don't think they're going to kill one of his interests.
I don't think they're going to kill off Zendaya anytime soon.
Guess we'll see. It doesn't have to be a romantic love interest. It can be Ned. No. It can be any of his classmates. Like, it doesn't have to be closest to him.
Ned dying does open up doors.
That would be very different.
That would be intense.
I mean, he just needs a loss of somebody very close to him. Uncle Ben. Does he? I think he does.
I mean, he just had that, didn't he?
But I mean, that's
not in his own movie.
That's what happens with Spider-Man. That's what they do to Spider-Man. The comics does it. The movies have done it. They pour tragedy on this one person until he just breaks.
I don't think the fact that it wasn't in his movie is relevant in the MCU because it's not one movie anymore.
Well, he did get a tragedy dumped on him, and the whole next film has to deal with it because of what happened in the mid-credit scene. And
sure.
So, well, let's talk about that. So let's talk about how great Mysterio was, because Jake Gyllenhaal was really the shining highlight of this film, and Mysterio.
Same as the first movie with Michael Keaton. I mean, it's the villains are always in the Spider-Man movies. They've done a really great job. It might be the best, depending on how the third one comes out. So far, it's in contention for the best villains of any franchise within the MCU.
Give a lot of credit to Tom Holland, because as soon as he steps foot on set, he makes friends with the person who's supposed to be the villain, so the two of them have a really good connection. He did that with Michael Keaton. Now, he calls Jake Gyllenhaal his husband. Yeah, so
we've all seen that meme.
It's so great. Oh, my God. I love the two of them together. Their
interviews are great. I always watch the interviews for the actors for movies I like. And, seeing them together is always a lot of fun.
I've always been very critical of Jake Gyllenhaal. I've never been, a huge fan of his work. But
is it because he played the Prince of Persia and he's clearly not Persian?
I've actually never seen that.
I have. I saw it opening weekend.
He's not Persian.
No. But he is so
cast, not his fault though.
He's so great in this, and I love him so much that I'm sad they went with the twist that we expected. I kind of wish I know it's the point, but it bums me out because I just want to see more of him. And yet again, Marvel killed off their villain.
Yeah,
they didn't. He's a master of illusion. He's not dead.
Okay,
there's no way that they got Jake Gyllenhaal and they're killing him off.
I mean, they got Jeff Bridges and they killed him off.
That was the first movie in the entire MCU, though. That was before they had 9 picture deals and everything else, other than Robert Downey
Jr. I don't know. I mean, most of them, it's Michael Keaton and Tom Hiddleston Tom Hiddleston was killed off a bunch of times, so in every movie.
Alive, so, No, I mean, my point is more of just that I didn't want them to get rid of him so quickly.
Right.
I don't want them to get rid of Cate Blanchett. Like, they keep getting rid of people that I love.
Like, faking deaths gets boring after a while. And there's other things that have done that recently that we're not going to bring up here that I think you know what I'm talking about. Right. And it just kind of gets old. If you want a character to continue on, come up with something else. Have them get arrested. Have them get caught,
Normally, I agree with you. The only reason I don't have as much of a problem with it in this movie and with Loki is because Loki is a trickster god. Well, that's his whole thing. And Mysterio's whole thing is illusion and deception. And so I don't have a problem with those two characters doing that because that's kind of – it's kind of like Nick Fury. Nick Fury's whole thing is that he's a super secret agent that's part of his thing. If it's just now they're going to bring Iron Man back, then yes, obviously I would have an issue with that or Cap, even though he's not dead, but so I have less of a problem with it in that context. If they killed Vulture off and then brought him back, he's not a trickster villain or any kind of illusion.
He's a blue collar worker. Yeah.
But so is Quentin. And I thought that's something that they've done with both of
them. He's not. Well, Quentin was a super scientist that Tony stole from.
He was a working for a billionaire playboy that was essentially
not blue collar.
No, but
Quentin was very white collar.
But
it's a working man.
But I think that it's a tired trope, and if he is a master of illusion, he should be able to escape pretty easily. Why is it harder for him to escape than to fake his death?
Well, it's not that he has a problem with escaping, it's that he wants the world to think he's dead, and so he had to make it a big thing.
I guess if you're going to bring him back, I'd rather you tell the audience that at some point and have some scene where we know he's alive, but nobody else does, because I'm just kind of bored with that.
We're running out of time here.
Already?
Yeah. Oh
my God. Yeah, we go over all the time when we do movie reviews.
So I got to say, I absolutely adore how they did his powers here. The drones,
the faceless army again, time it's drones.
It was so good, though.
They're controlled by somebody.
I guess, yeah.
It was really well done. The thing is, Mysterio, he had magic, but he had really shitty magic. It wasn't, great, so he just learned to... He was... Oh, God, what's his name? From Chamber of Secrets. He was the fraud guy.
The frog
guy? I don't know Harry Potter yeah. well enough to know who you're talking about.
Oh my god, he was Kenneth Branagh's character. The the one that everybody loved. Who did Defense Against the Dark Arts and had the Cornish Pixies and... Oh my god. Anyway.
We're going to spend half the podcast figuring this out.
No, but like that's what Mysterio is. He was a con man this whole time. So he gets great at one thing. Instead of a memory charm, it's illusion. And in here... It's science. He redirects science. None of it is magic. And I loved that. I was really curious. It was an
interesting take on the character for sure.
The montage, the illusion montage at the construction site.
That is the most comic book thing I've ever seen.
One of the best scenes in the MCU, period.
That's one of the coolest scenes I've seen in a movie ever.
It's right up there with the Doctor Strange sequence from.
Oh, I think it's better, man. It might be better. Because at least everything had a purpose in this one. Like that one was just, let's see how far the 3D effects will go.
Well, there's trippy. Like the Doctor Strange one is super trippy, and I feel like it's a beautiful scene.
Yeah.
But this one is so different. It's so much like it's a ride, right? Like this is something that you would have done at like Universal if there was the Spider-Man ride at Universal or something like that. 100%. You know?
This was so comic booky. It reminded me of everything I used to read as a kid and just seeing it. It made this movie my favorite Spider-Man movie, my favorite live action. Just that one scene. I could watch that every day.
Yeah, it was very good. And yeah, you were right. It's a standout scene among movies in general, but especially in the MCU, it's very it's very well done and very high up there.
It's incredibly clean cut. Like there, it's not a messy scene by any respects. It's not difficult to follow, as complicated and convoluted it is. It's just impressive across the board.
It's really neat that all the cool things they're doing with visuals between the fun stuff in Thor Ragnarok and Doctor Strange and Captain Marvel and now this. You know, I really think they're trying to take that superhero thing to the next level. Because let's face it, we compare those four movies to the first, you know, four or five of the MCU. And a lot of them are formulaic. They had the same special effects. They
weren't letting directors do their own thing.
Yeah.
It was cool. It was really well done. I like that they were able to kind of keep it realistic.
And it gets inside hit by a train at the very end. Like... He messes him up. Tom Holland's character, you know, Peter Parker easily could have died. And
It takes more than a train to kill Spider-Man.
He's very durable. As we saw in Spider-Man 2 already.
That's true.
I was a little disappointed in the new suit that he makes himself on the jet. I was expecting something a little bit.
Yeah, the black.
The wings. That was cool because he could glide. But
that's from issue number one of The Amazing Spider-Man. Yeah, wings. The wings. That was really cool.
I was just expecting the suit to look a little more techie. I guess because of how it was being designed.
See, I'm fine with it not looking techie. Spider-Man is not a tech character, really, other than all web shooters.
I don't agree with that at all.
The MCU's was made it more techie.
Yeah,
but... right. But that's what that's the character that we have. And in the five movies that he's been in, he's other than Civil War, he's been pretty tech heavy.
Okay. I mean, I'm saying the character, you know, is going back to his roots with not relying on a bunch of tech, because Iron Man was an influence on him with the tech, and it was cool. The Iron Spider suit was cool, but I think a more pure Spider-Man experience.
I wasn't looking for the Iron Spider.
With him just using his abilities and not relying on a suit is, in my opinion, better. Sure, you might not like it because it's not established what we have in the MCU, but I liked that it was not techie and that it was back to basics, because he started in sweatpants. And goggles.
Yeah. But the point is that wasn't like the good stuff, and now he's got access to it. That's all.
Yeah, and he doesn't want it. So.
Yeah, and I'm just, based on what he had to go up against, I'm not sure that was a smart decision.
I mean, he won.
Barely. And did he? I mean, did he win? Because the end of the movie certainly makes it look like he didn't win. So.
Okay.
No?
Okay, so let's talk about the end of the movie where, or we can talk about the one issue I have with Mysterio, and that's that giant exposition scene where he just has the longest villain monologue, and he introduces and explains every single key role that a person had in his group and how to create this illusion, and I hated every second of it. It went on way too long. Like, I don't need your credits, buddy. I get it. Like, the whole thing with him is he's slowly becoming his own megalomaniac and forgetting and stepping on the little people that he was once a little person who was stepped on. So, you know, you could have just started leaving more and more people out.
I didn't have that big of a problem with it. Yeah, it went on long. But, like, the connection to, was it Civil War? When he had the barf thing?
Barf was Age of... Yeah, Civil War. And then
the original Iron Man. Yeah. You know, I thought those were nice shout-outs.
I mean, it worked because he wasn't just randomly talking. It was like a congratulations acceptance speech. If you've ever worked
with a business and you had a really good day of sales or something, you could see something like
it's
that.
It's pretty common. Yeah. Like, if
and I think those go on too long, too.
I'm not saying they don't. I'm just based on who those characters were supposed to be. It seemed to fit really well, you know, and... You call out everyone's accomplishments and you're kind of cocky and jovial because you pulled it off and it was actually easier than you thought it was going to be. So you guys must be really smart. So you're going to pat each other on the back a bunch. Like, I don't know.
That I will say that moment did kind of break my heart. As soon as he stands up and he says, "Get this crap off of me." Like, God, he had played the good guy so well right before that. It just broke my heart.
I was like, with Derek where I was like, man, I wanted to be a part of the Avengers.
I know.
But you know, that's the whole thing, right? He's a con man. And so,
We all knew it was coming.
Sure.
But Gyllenhaal.
But see, sometimes I don't want to know. And I thought it would have been cool to just completely flip the character on its head and do something totally different. Have him be legitimately from another Earth. Have him be a good guy. And maybe you have... our Earth's, you know, con man one show up at some point down the road.
Like the Mandarin?
You know, but not like the Mandarin, but you could have an interesting duality where they have to fight each other.
Jake Gyllenhaal fight would have been fun.
You know, you could do that down the road. It doesn't have to be in this film, but it just would have been cool because part of the things that the MCU have done really well is when they have kind of looked at what the comic books did and then did it their own way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there aren't really that many copycats in the MCU.
Yeah.
I will say, that's another thing. The multiverse is a lie. Yeah. We're not getting a multiverse in this movie.
Yeah, especially considering we had a whole episode based
on
that.
Yeah, we did.
There was one scene that I saw broken down on Reddit that I didn't catch during the movie, but I thought was really interesting that I think you guys would find interesting, too, if you haven't already seen it, because there's been a meme around it floating around, too. The scene where Mysterio floats up to Peter when he's sitting on the edge of the roof or whatever, the ledge, when they're just watching for the monster or whatever, and Mysterio's talking to him about MJ and everything. The way the scene is shot is it's shot in a way to have two people in the scene. When it's focused on just Peter and the area behind him, the way they shot it was to show where Mysterio was actually coming in, because he isn't actually Mysterio when he's floating up. It's the mocap, whatever,
right?
Mysterio, because he can't actually fly, right? So when he goes and sits on the ledge, that's the real Mysterio. So the way the scene was shot, you don't actually see like cloaked Mysterio, but you can see the stairway where he would be coming, and the camera follows the path he would have been taking and meets right when he sits down on the ledge. And the illusion ends and Mysterio actually is sitting there. If you go back and look at it, it's really interesting to rewatch that scene. The scene is actually on YouTube because it was in the promotional materials. But it's really cool. I didn't pick up on it during the movie, but watching going back and looking at it after having it explained to me, it was shot wide. Like, there should be, you know, when we were analyzing the Endgame trailer and we were like, there's definitely somebody standing there that they cut out. Yeah. It was like that. The whole scene when it's focused on Peter and kind of circling around him. Definitely go and check that out. It's a really cool way of handling that I didn't pick up on, but going back and looking at it, I can really appreciate what they did there.
That is neat.
Yeah, not a lot of people pick up on that, but
so we got to talk about the climax, the final fight between Mysterio and Spider-Man, and it was really interesting and very well done, in my opinion, seeing Spider-Man inside the illusion of the giant elemental monster and taking down all the individual drones inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, it was a bit anticlimactic, I guess, because he's not really fighting anything except a bunch of drones.
Right.
And so it's just another, like I said, faceless army.
It is.
But it was cool. It was, at least it wasn't like aliens.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, it was actual technology that we don't really have, but it's similar to what we really have, you know? So I did think the whole way they handled Mysterio was great with the and being drones and projectors and things like that. So it was a cool scene. It wasn't like my favorite, you know, climax of any Marvel movie, but everything Mysterio did in that scene was good, I thought. Jake Gyllenhaal I just really loved in this movie.
Mm-hmm. So they have a final showdown, and Mysterio still has a few illusions to pull out. And as soon as Spider-Man says, yes, execute them all, I was like, oh, that's not going to go well.
Yeah, I thought that was a weird way of phrasing it. But
saying the word execute, I was like, oh, that's going to turn around on you, buddy. Don't know how, don't know when.
But I didn't expect it to go that far, though. Like,
oh, really?
In the end credits scene, I didn't expect them to actually reveal, you know, that Peter Parker is Spider-Man.
Let's talk about that.
So here's the thing,
because that's a huge thing for the Marvel universe.
I mean,
absolutely,
it's supposed to be, but like, he's kind of the only hero that people don't know who he is. So is it that big of a deal?
Well, they're gonna write it off, I'm sure.
Well, it's because he's technically underage. They were keeping him quiet because, like, he's still a kid. And
sure.
If they find out that this kid has also been to space and fighting these giant battles like that, there's got to be, like, laws against that, right? Like,
I mean,
child armies aren't a thing.
Who are you going to prosecute?
But that's the thing. Like, that.
Like, I mean, like, they're not going to have that movie. That's not going to be a movie, right? So the real ramifications of this are what? He just has to deal with what every
Flash Thompson.
But he just has to deal with what every other MCU hero has had to deal with for 10 years.
Yeah, he can't fly under the radar anymore. He's still in school. He's still got, you know, all these things going on around him. You know, everything that happens around him now, and if he does something wrong, can be completely blamed on him, and he doesn't have any way of hiding. Where all his loved ones are now in danger, which I think is the biggest part of it.
I guess, but it loses some of its impact because it just makes him the same as everybody else.
I don't think it does. I think because his character is different. First of all, we already talked about him being underage and exposing yourself like that. Like, we saw in Iron Man 3 what happens when people have your personal identity and your address and stuff. Now it's technically a kid. That's not okay. That's not cool. So that's a big deal. Like, this is going to affect him in school, in college, and it was also not on his terms. Thor, Captain America, Iron Man, that was all on their terms.
I understand. It loses weight when everybody else is already dealing with it. This is,
I mean,
movie
not
23 and
everybody else. Like, Captain Marvel's identity is not public.
Well, she spends most of her time in space. I'm not sure that matters.
She gets away with it because she's not on Earth, but I think...
all of our heroes have had to deal with the fact that people know who they are. That has been that was a point in her movie. People were trying to take advantage of her. The Kree computer system was, you know, taking form of her mentor and all those types of things. I mean, she had to deal with that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
they went after the only family she really had.
Okay.
You know, I just, if this was the world where nobody knew who the heroes were, then yeah, it's a really big deal. I found the cameo to be far more interesting and intriguing.
Yeah, J.K. Simmons is back as J. Jonah Jameson.
I knew about that, too, because of the spoiler that I got. Right. But also, like, that was kind of almost hugely spoiled just by Marvel's coverage of their own premiere, because J.K. Simmons was there, and they made it a big point.
Oh, man. I didn't know that.
Pictures of him and stuff.
That's huge.
So, you know, because I already knew at that point, and then I saw the pictures of him there, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's a huge spoiler for people, and I just hope people didn't pick up on it.
I didn't pick up on it, because in my head, I'm like, well, they're inviting him because he's part, you know, he's been part of the Spider-Man, you know, universe, and they just want to, you know, like, he's there because he's an actor, you know. It didn't occur to me that they were going to use him in the same role, because it asks some interesting questions about casting. You know, is there, then, like, does that show that there is a multiverse, and this just was not the you know, Mysterio was lying about it, but it does really exist, and the other Spider-Man, he is, you know, in another universe somewhere as the one that we saw with Tobey Maguire.
I don't find that very interesting, just because we're not probably ever going to see that. I mean, the chances are very slim that we'll ever see a Spider-Man multiverse in live action.
Then why cast him?
Because it's fan service.
No, I mean, it's legit because the same reason Jon Favreau brought only one actor back for The Lion King. It was James Earl Jones. I think some people embody a role so well that you just can't replace them. There's just nobody out there. And I can't think of one other person who could be J. Jonah Jameson because of just how intensely J.K. Simmons played him. And it's a small role, so why not bring him back? It doesn't matter if he ages. It doesn't matter. His hair, obviously, has changed. Different. His mustache was gone. Like, he showed up on set as J.K. Simmons. They did no makeup or hair and was like, hey, man, do your thing. You'll film 30 seconds and it'll be perfect. And he was like, yes.
They shot it in a conference room with a green screen.
In one day. That's what it looks like. That man showed up on set, collected his bag of money, and then went to the premiere.
But he theoretically would have a fairly significant role in the third film.
And that makes sense because Peter's about to graduate high school, and that's when he goes and works with the Daily Bugle.
Not anymore.
Hey, that's a ramification. But
That's a big one, though. The fact that he's not going to work for the Bugle is a big one. But I also didn't see this version of Spider-Man going that route because his life is just so drastically different. It's not like he needs to be shelling photos of himself to pay for food, you know. Like, it worked really well for Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man because he was, you know, really broke trying to live on his own. And
Within the first movie, he graduates high school and moves out on his own and stops living off of his aunts and uncles. So in the first movie, you know,
he didn't have Tony Stark money.
Okay.
Does he have Tony Stark money now?
I don't know. He left him a satellite surveillance weapon system and
an AI.
That
doesn't mean he has a bunch of money.
I can't imagine.
One of the scenes they cut out, he was selling his Star Wars toys to fund his trip to Europe. But they cut it out.
So
they cut it out because it was too long. The movie was too long.
Or maybe it just didn't make sense.
But in any case, he's clearly not got Tony Stark money. I mean, why are they living in a tiny apartment in Queens if he has Tony Stark money? Like, there's a lot of things that show that he's not Tony Stark money. I think that it's more like, you know, Pepper sometimes will, like, give him money for Spider-Man stuff, right? Like the suit that they built at the end or something like that. But that she's not, like, giving him a mansion or, like,
I didn't say he was given
paying for all his flight and travel everywhere.
Well, I didn't say he was given unlimited funds. I think
Tony Stark money is unlimited funds.
I didn't say he was given all of Tony Stark money.
You said Tony Stark money.
Yeah, and I was trying to, like, say it quickly rather than detail it, but let's detail it out for a minute. So Nick Fury created this trip that the guy he needs the trip for couldn't afford. Because that makes even less sense then if you want to keep
it.
Do
we know that Nick Fury created the whole trip? Like,
that's what we were told in the movie.
That he created the whole trip?
Yeah.
He changed the trip around.
No,
once it already started.
They call it out. There's a scene where he is like, so was this supposed to even happen? There was nothing sciencey about it. And they were like, no. So.
Okay. Well, either way, that's not like that completely proves your argument. No, Tony Stark money is all Peter Parker money. It's not a proof one way or the other.
I'm just saying that it seems unlikely to me that given what we know Tony has given him, that he has zero money from that.
But no, I disagree.
Okay. Seems weird. Here's a $2 billion defense system. Go buy yourself some pizza.
For the Avengers. It's a Spider-Man thing. Not, like I said, anything Spider-Man, I feel like Tony Stark or Pepper or whoever's running Stark Industries is happy to provide for him.
Sure. I'm not saying that if he asks for help, they're going to turn him down. I'm just saying that it doesn't make sense for me that if they were really that close, that he wouldn't leave him any money.
I mean, they wouldn't probably live in a tiny apartment if that was the case.
I mean, we don't really know.
This is the dumbest argument I think we've ever had. Like,
all right, move on.
All right, guys, that kind of wraps us up for the week.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah. Like, what else is there to talk about the movie unless you want to keep going?
Well, there's the post-credit scene.
Yeah, we talked about both post-credit scenes.
The only part we didn't talk about was with Samuel Jackson, where he's at in space and what that means.
We don't actually know where he's at, technically. He's on a Skrull base, and there's a ton of them, and he's just chilling in this, like,
gets called back,
hollow suite kind of thing. It's very Star Trek that he's just sitting there on a beach.
Yeah.
And yeah,
which is weird seeing Nick Fury that way.
Yeah, it was seeing him in like some flowery swim trunks.
Yeah, it would only have been worse if he was wearing Crocs. But other than that, like, it was really weird.
clearly they're leading up to two very big things, where Spider-Man's going and where the MCU's going.
And Secret Invasion getting ready to happen. We don't know. I mean,
it'd be very difficult to paint the Skrulls in a bad light at this point.
But you could have like a rebel force of Skrulls that like is doing the wrong thing.
And I think that's the best move. You have to depict these races of villains to be the exact same as us. They're good. They're bad.
Yeah.
There's in between.
And Captain Marvel saved them all.
She did.
That's right.
She's our savior.
Was there something you wanted to say about it, Derek?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
All right. Then we're over, guys. We're done for the week. What did you guys think of Spider-Man Far From Home? We hope you enjoyed it. What?
Are we going to grade it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not new here.
Okay.
Just letting you know. Ryan, you want to establish a letter grade for Master Derek?
I'd say B.
Yeah.
It wasn't the best. It was probably in the better half of MCU movies, and I enjoyed it more than Homecoming, but
yeah.
It wasn't, you know, any Winter Soldier, or basically any of the Captain America movies for me. So
that's fair. Derek?
B plus.
Cool.
Rachel?
A minus. I really enjoyed it, yeah.
That's high for a Spider-Man movie for you.
The thing is, I'm not really invested in Spider-Man, and I've seen them do the same storyline multiple times throughout even the same first trilogy. So I really liked this movie. It did something new. It did something different. And all the stars were like on point for me. So I just had a really good time. Yeah. So if you guys are watching us live on Twitch or watching later on YouTube, you can see our tags at the bottom. You can follow Heroes Podcast at Heroes Podcast. You can go to our website, heroespodcast.com. You can follow Screen Heroes at Screen Heroes Pod on Twitter. You can follow Ryan at Buster Props. You can follow Derek at the Star Trek Dude. And you can follow me at Siren Ray. Of course, you can listen to any of our other shows, as well as this one, every week on iTunes and, or not iTunes, Apple Music and Spreaker, Spotify. Those are the big ones. So thanks again for joining us, and we will catch you next week.